I got a question. I've heard Ian in some recent conferences, both in the Access Unlimited and this one that just happened this past weekend up in Toronto with Ecclesia Burning Ones there. He mentions the East Gate, and he talks about, well, he talked about that the wise men, in Jesus's birth, were actually beings that came out of the East Gate and not really men from the East as we've been taught in our Sunday schools. But he mentions this East Gate a lot, that things come out of the East Gate, and it's like a portal, I guess. I was just wondering if you could bring some more clarity to that, if you have something.
I mean, as to the, issue of wise men and that stuff, I mean, I neither have any negative or positive towards that. It's never not something that I've particularly had any connection to. But the East Gate itself, I mean, if you do a sort of any sort of biblical search for East Gate, and you'll find that East Gate is always the access point for things to flow out of. So in sense, the where the river of life flows out from under the temple, flows out from the East Gate south of the altar. And so it's usually a point, if you think of north, south, east, and west, and the yod hey vav hey, and the setting of the compass of on those things, then you have the kingly function at the East Gate. The lion. I think it has a symbolic nature of access and flow. The North Gate particularly has a negative connotation biblically of the winds coming out of the north, and there's usually the cold winds, and you get that in Song of Songs, different things. There are different gates. I mean, actually, it's a very interesting subject, gates. I'm actually engaging with it a bit myself at the moment, because I'm looking at being a gate, and looking at our spirit, and at the access point in our spirit as a gateway of heaven, and the Bethel being the house of God and the gateway of heaven. So I've been looking at the gateways, and of being a gateway, and being a place of transition, and being a place of trade, and being a place of authority. The gateways are, if you look through, go through the gateway teaching, obviously there's lots of things there about what gates are for. And so when it's like an East Gate, the gate itself has the same function as every gate, a place of access and entry, thing. So the East particularly has a symbolic function in that this alignment with the four faces of God. Also, when you look at, go back into the pattern of the children of Israel, when they were patterned around the tent, the tabernacle, they were set out north, south, east, west, and there were three tribes on each face. So it's interesting if you go and look at the tribes that were on the East Gate, and you can have an indication there of those tribes as opposed to the others, because they had certain functions. So you can see some of the functions there of those that were on the East Gate. I mean, interestingly enough, I mean, a lot of that is to do with access into this realm, and administration into this realm through the East Gate. When you look at and look into the gateways from different perspectives, there's a sort of a different aspect of understanding of it, and I've been looking at it, in my own life, and looking at where I access certain things in my own life through gateways, and I found it quite an interesting meditative process. I'm in the process of spending some time looking at those gates, and how I flow in and out of them, and what flows in and out of them. Because ultimately, what flows into us needs to flow out of us. And you have the river of life ultimately flowing so that it will produce life wherever it goes when it flows out. And of course, you have the same thing with, you know, the garden and the river of God flowing out of Eden, flowing into the garden, and then flowing out in four. So there's a connection with how these things function together in gateways. And you know, if you look at Jerusalem itself, Jerusalem had a number of different gates. And if you, I think the best place to find the different gates and their function is in Nehemiah, I think chapter 2, where it talks about the sheep gate and the fish gate, and ultimately there's the dung gate, and there's a water gate and there's a fountain gate. And so there are, you know, none of these things are coincidental. You know, they're there biblically because they're an indication of something that was patterned, that we need to be aware of once we start to look into this stuff. I mean, the interesting thing that although the manifestation of God's presence in the ark was patterned after heaven, and it was in their midst, that was all to do with them gathering together around the tabernacle, but that's not where God showed up. He showed up in the tabernacle once a year when the high priest went in to deal with sin, which was to do with their earthly behavior and function in the gathering together. He met the tent of meeting where the pillar of fire turned up was on the outside of the camp. Which is an indication of the fact that what we do here, gathered here for an outworking of God's purposes on earth, has to be connected to the realm where we gather outside of that realm, which is the realm of heaven, where we get the flow for it to function. And you do get things like, you know, Jesus was crucified outside the gates. And there were various things that took place outside the gates. And so these are all really sort of interesting sort of analogies, and you begin to understand the nature of engaging heaven and being a gateway. And, you know, God set the compass that way with north, south, east, and west for a purpose. And as you begin to connect up with the source, then some of the purpose then just begins to get unveiled. So you could look at the north, south, east, and west and look at the four faces of God and see that as a representation of. For us, we found it interesting over the last 12 months, I guess, with the engagement with the four angels, of transformation and wind of change, and those angels, they have a connection with the four faces of God. So it's like the four faces of God. If you think of a pyramid or a square or whatever, whichever way you want to turn it, you have the points, but you also have the faces. So we've found an alignment that's taken place where the four angels have come in the four corners of our room, which are the four corners, which are the points of this sort of shape, and the actual four faces of God have been the faces of those, so which have been north, south, east, and west, which is an indication that that brings two things together for an arc, because you have the north, say east, and the north face, producing a point, which is an arc, which then brings a manifestation. And for us, that's been the angel of transformation. Then you've had the east and the south, and that's for us has been an arc, which has brought the angel of the refining fire. Then you have north and west, which has produced a point that for us has been the winds of change. And then you have west and south, which has been an arc, which has manifested sound of many waters. So we've had and seen this patterned. And sometimes recently when we've had engagement in our corporate gatherings have gone from gathering around the tabernacle to gathering around the tent of meeting, and actually we've seen an overlap of things of heaven on earth. So we've seen the temple and the altars and things being in our midst as we've sort of overlapped into it. And some of these things are because of this overlapping and arc forming to bring manifestation, where you're not really sure whether you're where you are. You know, it's like, for me, I mean, I guess I'm looking into this a little bit more, and I begin to see very much the spiritual dynamic of where we are, and sometimes we have a physical sort of faith step of engagement where we particularly use colors of flags and different things that, you know, are sort of, Jo, who really is in our Council of 12, she's really clued into the whole thing of portals and colors and engagement with the different movements of the color. And so quite often she'll lay flags out on the floor, which have been in relation to north, south, east, and west, and the different dimensions. And as people have stepped onto the flags, they've had an engagement into that heavenly realm, which has been pretty amazing. And we've had the seven spirits of God really turning up powerfully and engaging people on the colors as they've stepped into it. So, you know, is this that type of thing is what you sort of end up sort of gaining access to once you begin to understand what flows in and out of gates and how that pattern is there for us to engage with and experience. So, yeah, that's probably as much as I've got on that. But
oh, that's good. Yeah, that, wow, all kinds of light bulbs going off there. I'm going to have to do a lot of studying. That's interesting, though. Yeah. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Anyone else got something they want to share?
Well, Mike, right there on what you just talked about, could you, I mean, it's probably a remedial question as usual, but distinguish between the tent of meeting, you know, the high priest went in once a year into the tabernacle, the inner court, met God there. Other than that, outside of the tent of meeting, you said the pillar of fire.
Yeah.
And outside the tent.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Repaint that picture for me a little bit. I get the priest inside the tabernacle, but the tent, I thought that was the tent of meeting. You know, the whole outer court was the tent of meeting. Am I missing something there?
That's not how it was patterned. Literally what happened was that they were, when they came out of Egypt, they were very much a very disparate group who hadn't really connected with, they were slaves. So they had no real sense of identity or real sense of understanding community and how they were to work together. And so, in a sense, the family aspect of who they were, because obviously they were 12 tribes who came out of a family engagement from Jacob, Israel, and his children, effectively. They lost a lot of the connection to that because they failed to live in Bethel under an open heaven, and that was a major mistake because God told them to go to Bethel and live there, and they decided because they had loads of flocks, and Bethel was not a good place for flock because it was a higher mountain place, they didn't stay. So they came out of Egypt lacking identity, and God ordered the order of the tribes in the around the tabernacle. And so you had north, south, east, and west, and you had the different tribes that met there. And so then they were drawn back into identity. They were drawn back. So when they came out, they were a rabble. But God started to bring them back into family identity and understanding their function and who they were. And so certain tribes were given certain functions, like you set up the camp, you break the camp, you protect the camp. So there was a very much a whole thing that started to form, and literally God was fathering them. He was bringing them back into relationship with their own families so that they began to meet together rather than just be spread out in all the dust. And then they were their clans within families, and then their tribes, and then the three tribes that were relating to each other. If you look at where they came from, you look at the mothers of the different tribes, it's very interesting to see how they were beginning to be ordered. And so that was around the tabernacle. which was very much the priestly function of mediating between those people who were around the tabernacle and the things that were in the tabernacle, of course, the altar, you know, and you had the laver and you had the table with shewbread and the light, all representing things of engagement. Now, of course, that is patterned after heaven. So there is a heavenly tabernacle where you can go and engage. Of course, the veils were there. So only certain people could go in mediatorially on their behalf, which was the Levites and the sons of Aaron, who were the priests. So there was a very ordered structure about this. But outside of the tent, outside of the camp that was set in that order, and they had to set camp and break camp, and that's where they used the silver trumpets to blow the for setting and moving of the camp. There was a load of stuff around that. Outside of it was the tent of meeting. And the tent of meeting was where Moses would go and where Joshua actually went, and the elders went to engage with God in intimacy and relationship. Everything within the gathering was much more ordered and not relational, because they could not relate in the same way. And so, and symbolically, that represents the engagement with heaven. I mean, it's the engagement where God came to them outside, and the symbol of outside of their normal earthly gathering was that there's a heavenly gathering that you can engage in. And so that, you know, you have, when you have things like the tent of meeting or meeting in tents, it's about a habitation and a dwelling place, you know. And you had Abraham, who was sat in the tent, and he was in the doorway of the tent, and he looked up and saw into heaven, and then he stepped into that realm. So it was always a doorway into another realm of engagement. And so that's where you find Joshua hung out. Even after Moses left the tent of meeting, Joshua hung out even more and had a deeper revelation than Moses, because he hung out longer there and spent time there, and it was a focus. Whereas then Moses went off and did the judicial issues and started to, you know, with the elders, and they were bringing government into the gathering. Joshua spent time in more intimacy and in connection with heaven. And that's where the pillar of fire turned up, and the pillar of cloud, it was different.
Got it. So that was out. I've always had in my mind's eye the tabernacle as a synonym with the tent of meeting. And in my mind's eye, Joshua had an exception clause going in and out, you know, kind of like David did with his tabernacle, went in and hung on the horns and all that stuff. So it's literally a different tent outside of the camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And literally what it's representing is we need to engage in heaven if we're going to see the ordered gathering on earth around God's presence here, in that sense. So this is just an analogy that is symbolic of something. And I think, you know, the pillar of cloud and pillar of fire, again, is a really interesting thing when you start to engage what are pillars, because you find so much about pillars. Now, I only know this, again, because I got taken to a place in one of the Chancellor's houses in heaven that was full of pillars. So I'm asking, what are these pillars? What are they for? What do they represent? Which Chancellor's house am I in? Okay, I understand these pillars. Now I need to know why pillars are so important. And of course, you get on wisdom's heights, and in Proverbs 9, the wisdom's house is hewn out of seven pillars. And then when you look at the altar, they built it on 12 pillars. And then when you look in the tabernacle, they had three pillars, and they had four pillars, and they had five pillars. All these pillars were different numbers associated with things that were supports and places of where the government could rest upon to outwork things. And so I've been looking at this stuff recently because, you know, I've been encountering it. Therefore, I need to meditate around it to find the purpose of it. And there is a purpose. And, you know, you get then the church being the pillar of the truth. And so there's a lot more that, you know, I need to understand. But there's a what I'm discovering is there's a functioning with the Chancellor's houses, that there's an order that they function in, and so the pillars, which are about the precepts of God on which everything is founded, are linked to the statutes of God, which are linked to the ways of God, and they're linked all in the nine firestones as well. And so I'm finding lots of connections as I sort of spend some time engaging these houses. You know, and I was in one of the houses, and they were just full of lightning bolts, you know, and these lightning bolts had declarationary things on them. So I'm sort of like, okay, how do we start throwing these lightning bolts? And it's like, no, you can't flow these lightning bolts without pillars, because the pillars give are the precepts that allow the ordinances to be outworked. So I'm like, okay, there's a lot of protocol I need to understand here. So I'm sort of just engaging in some of it right now to understand the protocol, and then I will start to, I guess, release some of that protocol out once I fully understand it. Because there's a huge connection with some of the other Chancellor's houses about how we administrate things, like the affairs of nations. There's a culture house that we have to begin to change and transform the affairs of nations and begin to govern, but you can't do it without the precepts and the statutes and the ordinances, because the ordinances move things around within the kingdom. But yeah, so it quite interesting. These things do tie together.
Yeah.
Well, they do for me anyway, because that's how my brain works. And once I get onto a trail, then I begin to follow the trail and see where it goes, and you know, open it up for understanding it. Yeah.
Well, I got another real quick one. If nobody else wants to jump in, we've in our both personally and as our bench has gone to heaven, and even as our group has gone to heaven, we've encountered these beings. I don't even know what to call them, other than I've seen a couple of posts from people they're calling them ancient ones.
Yeah. People are asking me about them.
What?
Yeah. I've had quite a lot of questions about that recently. So, yeah.
Well, do you have any insight on that?
Okay. Their involvement with people, and my involvement with one or two of them has been very much linked to destiny, and so there have been. You know, I know one guy that are in one of the other mantle groups. He's had several in his life engagements with these ancient ones, and they're a bit sort of mysterious, and they're sort of cloaked and hooded and a little bit like, well, this is a bit strange, this is a bit odd, and in a sense they are supposed to be mysterious, because they're linked to the things that are hidden for us. So, you know, it's like there are things hidden in darkness for us to find, and so these ancient ones are linked and connected to the realm of the mysteries of God in darkness that's not yet in the light. And so they come hidden and cloaked out of the realm of darkness, because God separated light and dark, and there are hidden mysteries, not hidden from us, but hidden for us, that need to be brought into the light. And so my sort of experience with that and my revelation of it is that they're bringing stuff out of those realms, and some of those realms are tied to the thoughts and destiny of God about us and for us, and what we are supposed to outwork in our identity. And so when they engage us, often there are quite significant things and marker points or milestones that set us on a particular path, or almost like point us in a particular direction, or lead us to a particular truth, or an unveiling of a mystery that brings light and revelation, which almost changes something to bring us an understanding of a deeper understanding of nature of ourselves and our calling and our destiny. And I mean, who are they? I mean, they are created beings, and I think, you know, they're ancient ones because they're attached to the ancient paths and the ancient ways, which are, again, you start looking at ancient paths and ancient ways, and you'll find some of that stuff meets on the heights where wisdom is. Some of the pathways that meet there are ancient paths, ancient ways, and because wisdom has been there from the beginning, and it says she's there before the beginning. And so this is where some of these ancient pathways are connected to, and ultimately the greatest pathway is the pathway to the tree of life, which has been guarded by the cherubim and the fiery sword, which is into eternity. And that's where Enoch walked on some of those pathways, and he didn't come back. You know, so there is a connection to, I believe, these ancient ones and the hidden things of our destiny that are to be revealed. And you know, we have engagement with them when we're seeking for our identity. And sometimes God just does it because he needs to get our attention and bring one of these mysteries into our experience so that we can pursue it. And it's like that should be our reaction to it. This should set us on a quest to a pursuit towards desire so that that can become something that becomes a part of our outworking of our identity and who we are. But they are starting to show up more and more, so it's not unexpected that you're encountering them, because you're beginning to press into or go through veils into the place where, you know, those mysteries are designed to be unveiled and revealed to us. So it's, you know, it's some people who are forerunners would have had encounters with them, I think, even though they may not have fully understood them or understood it. And some people have been a bit like, whoa, that's a bit freaky because I can't see who they are because they're cloaked. And some of that is just because of the mysterious, hidden nature of it that wants us to pursue. You know, that's the thing. For those who are like, oh, that's hidden, I'm not interested, they're missing out on how God draws our hearts towards the mysteries. Because the fact that they are in darkness and hidden should set us on, I want to find out what they are. And so some of that will lead us to the ancient paths and ultimately back into the heart of God to see what was. You know, that's the ultimate place where these pathways lead into eternity. And back into what was and back into what we were so that we can bring that into what is today. That's probably, you know, as much personal understanding I've got of it. But I think that's what the revelation I've got anyway, so yeah.
Oh, that's good. That brings some clarity. Yeah, I'm going to be on a quest now.
Yeah, I like quests. You know, I've been sent on a few quests, and it's like, you know, because I just love going to the places that are there ready for me to discover, you know. But, yeah, it's good. So,
yeah. You're unmuted.
Mike, I have a question.
Yep.
Hey, how do you see the 13th tribe? Do you feel like that this is the tribe, that we are the 13th tribe, that God's arising? I mean, how do you see that?
There were obviously 13 children of Jacob, which is where this sort of 13th tribe thing comes from. It's got pretty much messed up in understanding, and it's got very mixed into New Agey type stuff, potentially. And some really weird stuff, like British Israel stuff, which is like really, you know, I definitely do not agree with any of that. But Jacob had 13 children, but if you actually look at the 12 tribes, they weren't made up of all Jacob's children, because Joseph had 2 tribes himself. And then when you go into the promise, in the promise land, you only actually had 9.5 tribes who took up their promise, because 2.5 tribes decided to settle on the other side, and one of those was Manasseh, which was half of the tribe of Manasseh. took their inheritance and the other half didn't. So that there's a whole sort of thing here which can get quite, if you try and pin it down to a simplistic thing, I think it can be, oh, well, we must be the 13th tribe because there was 13. Well, actually, there wasn't 13. There was more than 13 if you take into account the two. Because if you're talking about, I know Ian talks about that Dinah, who was the daughter, was the 13th child, but there were 13 tribes. Anyway, outside of that, because of the two that came out of Joseph. So, you know, so I think if you're looking at some sort of symbolic nature to it, I'm personally not convinced, because I think people are trying to tie this into Israel, and there's the 12 earthly tribes of Israel, then there's the heavenly spiritual one of the church, and I just don't buy that. So for me, you know, is there something that God is doing in the order of Melchizedek, which is to set a new order? Yeah, absolutely. Do we need to embrace that new order? Yeah, absolutely. Is there a 13th tribe that is supposed to provoke the other 12 tribes to jealousy and all that stuff? It's not where I am in Revelation. I'm not saying that's not what some people think. I think Ian probably thinks that. I think I heard him mention it, you know, over the weekend. So, but it's not where I am personally. So my personal understanding really is that we are the children of God. That's who God said we are. We are his children. And I don't want to be separate from any other children of God, because we're all one new man in Christ, all the old and the new brought together in this new covenant order. So this seemed to be going back to an old covenant order of, well, we've got 12 and now we've got another one. And it's separating everything up, which actually is what the middle wall of partition was pulled down to actually solve the issue. There is only one people of God, those who are of faith of Abraham in Christ. So to me, anyone who gets saved of Jew, Gentile, any other people becomes one in Christ. And we're all of the same family, all of the same tribe, one tribe. So I don't think there's 13, I think there's one. So that's my own personal view, because that's what I see scripturally taking place. You know, I see us coming together in oneness.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good.
Rather than being separated into more divisions, you know, mm-hmm. I want to be seen as one. Because there's one city of Jerusalem that has 12 gates, not 13. You know?
Yeah.
Even in that, you know, now I think you can see it as, okay, there were 12 apostles, but there was Jesus, you know, and in a sense, like, yeah, there were 13 who were gathered, but actually one of them was Jesus, you know, so, you know, we're now in him. And to me, it's like, if I'm in him and everyone else is in him, then we're one,
yeah,
as one big family. You know, and I certainly don't want to separate my family up. You know, so.
That's good, good.
Okay.
You were wrong. Hey, Mike, I have a question. I was really intrigued when you were talking about interfacing with the four angels. And I know we kind of feel those four angels come when we meet, but I'm not sure that we've really engaged with them to the extent to allow them to do what they're there for. Could you talk a little bit about how you started engaging those and the process that you guys have went through?
Okay. Well, basically, they just turned up. The transformation angel we've had engaging with us for quite a long time. And so I've personally had an affinity, if you like, with that angel. It birthed the transformation series in me in terms of understanding transformation, and there was a lot of revelation that came to me personally through that angelic messenger, if you like, although at that time I wasn't totally understanding everything of it. I now see what was going on. And then when we looked at engaging this season, essentially a three-year period of preparation that God gave us, then it became clear that there was help for us in engaging. And initially what I was aware of, that there were gathering angels that were quite stern and quite warrior-like around the edge of our meetings. And they were quite fierce looking, and they were sort of looking intently at us, looking to see, well, who is going to be willing to allow the stumbling blocks to be removed and the lawlessness to be removed, because we're here. And if you're going to be prepared for what's coming, you need the stumbling blocks removed so that you can be ready for judgment. And so it was like, oh, okay. But they were almost like looking for individually for people to engage, you know, and it was very much an individual thing that they were looking for a response from people to say, yeah, here I am, yeah, get rid of my stumbling blocks. I'm presenting myself, you know, I don't want to be a stumbling block, so I want those stumbling blocks in me removed so there can be a flow of life of God and everything else. It really wasn't until this beginning of this year, or very much the very end of last year, that things started to really ramp up in terms of angelic engagement and activity. And that's really when things really started to move. And first of all, there were these two angels, the transformation angel and the winds of change angel, stood at the front on the points of it would be sort of east and north and whatever, I can't remember exactly the things, but they stand at the front of our gathering, on the right and left of the front. And so I started seeing them, and then it's okay, well, what are you here for, you know? And because it was a new season, and that was the, I had a lot of prophetic revelation at that period when I began to seek God at the end of last year, and I issued some of it out, and some of it was quite challenging in terms of what was coming and being ready and, hey, let's get stuff sorted. And it was like, so the winds of change began to blow because we're coming into something new. There's a new season we've got to come into. Transformation's here because we need to change if we're going to come into this new season. And then we had the other two basically manifested in the sounds of many waters, because there was a calling deeper, this deep calling to deep, this sound of many waters, the sound of God's voice calling us, come deeper, you know. And then the refining fire, this sort of the pillar of fire, the refining fire angel, this, okay, now if you really want to be serious, you're going to engage the seraphim, you're going to engage the altar and the temple. You're going to have to put your heart on that altar. There's a whole fire that's going to be fanned, which is going to turn the heat up. So there was a lot of connection with that. And I think when I was with you guys, I think I shared some of, you know, the message that they brought in terms of those four angels and the particular aspects of what they were about. But they're very much here for people to personally engage with, but they come in our corporate times. And they've gone around with me when I've gone to places. It's like okay, that's a message that I carry for transformation and change and coming deeper, that they are associated with that message, which is essentially here God is calling us to be transformed into the image of his son, not to be conformed to the world. Therefore there we have to embrace the seasons that God brings us in, and sometimes that's the north wind season, sometimes it's the south wind. You know, there are different seasons that blows, and the wind blows from some different directions that we can begin to engage in different seasons in our life. You know, so some person will go up to that Winds of Change angel, and it will be like this warm wind just blows, and it's like, wow, isn't that amazing? And someone else will go up there, and it'll be this cold wind that comes out of the north, and it's just like, man, this is hard. Because sometimes God knows what we need to motivate us to change. And sometimes that's a carrot, and sometimes it's a little bit of a stick, if you like. Not that God is punishing, but he's basically prodding. You know, it's like the shepherd's rod is there to, you know, make sure. And, you know, by hook or by crook, sometimes he'll crook us around and yank us in the direction he wants us to go when we're not being obedient. And it's like, no, you need to come over here. You know, and sometimes, obviously, he uses trials and difficulties to get our attention. Hey, what's going on here? So I can use that to move forward. So, you know, that now we had an occasion the weekend after Bob Jones died where he appeared between these two angels with a fiery scroll. And, you know, I was pretty much... You know, I engaged with that and took the scroll, but I was aware that most people didn't. A few people did, but not most people. And there was a significance about that scroll because it was about the harvest and it was about other things. And that was between those two angels that he appeared. You know, so there have been some sort of experiences that we've had and engagements that we've had that have opened us to engage with what they're doing, and in a sense it's like I always, whenever I sort of find them activated or start to do things, then I'm aware. So one day the transformation angel, because normally they have heralding trumpets, you know, these long sort of heralding things, and they are blowing this message, so they're releasing and heralding transformation or a new season or the deep of God and fire, you know, that's what they're held in. Well, I saw this angel put down the trumpet and pick up this huge axe, this really big axe, and started chopping this axe down. So I'm sort of, okay, what's going on here? So I begin to engage, and but what are you doing? And he says, look, you need to see, look at the people. So I'm looking around at the people. In the spirit, I'm seeing all these chains attached to them. So there's these chains that are attached to them, but they're long chains. And so some of them don't even know that they're really there until they go on the journey and they engage something new, and all of a sudden they're yanked back because they come to the end of the chain and it's like, oh, wow, bang. And you find that people get, wow, they see something and they're going for it, and all of a sudden, wham, back they go. Something hits them. They get pushed backwards, yanked backwards to stop them going into something new. And so I could see this. And so I could see what was going on. And this angel said, transformation, I am come to break the chains of restriction that stop people going into the fullness of their destiny. So I'm like, oh, hey, awesome. So at the same time, the lady with the flags, she begins to lay this pathway of flags out on the floor, leading up to where this angel's standing with this big axe. And then she basically says, right, and I have these two flags with the promises of God, and God says if we walk on this pathway, we can engage the promises of God and enter into our destiny. And so she does this, and it's like, I basically just say, look, this is what's going on. To be able to go through here, you need to embrace the axe which this angel has to set you free from the restrictions that you may have put on yourself, that or other people may have put on you, words, limitations, everything that stops you from going into the fullness of your destiny. So, you know, I walked through the flag, and it's like I engaged this thing myself, and it was immediately, it was like I just got on the floor flat out. Because I was, my spirit just got taken out beyond what it was able to go before and see. I saw the whole of the created universe from a further out perspective and saw the whole thing. And it opened up this dimension for me to go further and me to see things, and then that's actually what then led me to some of the Chancellor's houses. So it was a whole, for me it was a really a powerful encounter, and I just got whizzed off and out to see things that I'd never seen before, because I didn't realize I was limited. But I was. I had a chain on that was a really long chain, but actually it was still a chain. And when I engaged the angel, it got broken, and it lifted a restriction that enabled me to embrace a level of government that I wasn't embracing before because of this restriction. And that's how it worked out on me. So we have numerous sort of practical engagements with them as they stand. Recently, we've had the four faces of God really begin to manifest, which, you know, I've seen in our Destiny Scroll, their engagement, and particularly the seven spirits of God. So we've had engagement with the seven spirits of God and the colors of the flags, because we have colored flags for each of the seven spirits, and we have flags for the four faces of God, which have got their faces on them. And then, so we have these flags because of the revelation that's been given to Joe, who has that, and so she's just been obedient to make these flags as God's given a revelation, and now she's been called to put oil and different fragrances on the flag. So I'm really looking forward to to engaging in that. I wasn't there on Sunday. I was away for my wife's birthday, so I didn't engage it where they first started it. But from tonight, we've got 3-4 days of revival meetings from Mike Bryant, who is the guy who came when we had 87 days of revival meetings. So we got a treat. So one of the things he's seen is opening up the books of heaven, so we're going to probably have a lot more angelic engagement over the next 3 or 4 days. So that's been some of our, you know, some of our engagement with it. It's been a process, just looking to see what they're doing, engage with them, and then just go with it. People share, you know, This is the dynamic that's going on right now, you know. And if that gives a little bit more detail.
Yeah, I think that clears up a lot of it. I like the thought of, as you engage with these four angels, there's a progression. Because it sounds like from what you've just described, there's a progression from these four angels almost representing the four faces of God in your meeting to the point of, you know, all that they're doing. So I think that's very helpful. I don't know that we've engaged the four to the extent that we need to in order to start bringing about some of the changes. I thought the chain was a very good point, because I think sometimes as we move and we're moving in what we believe is freedom based on what we used to move in, we may not see that we're reaching a limitation with the chain simply because we have moved some. Yes, there's still a chain that's keeping you from moving to the next point. So, yeah, that was a very good explanation. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay.
Good. All right, well, I got one more question if I can pop it in here.
Go on then.
A few more minutes. The concept of the Hebrew alphabet and the letters being living beings, Grant talk about, Grant Mahoney, Ian, and we actually had an encounter where one of these ancient ones came, opened up a scroll, and off of the scroll came these living letters that went into us, which I was like, wow, what is that all about? But they were living. They weren't just letters. Got any insight on that, Mike?
Again, I mean, if the encounters take place, then there will be a symbolic application of what that is trying to say. And so if you have an engagement with an ancient one and the engagement led to scrolls with the letters in the Hebrew language are obviously pictures and numerals. I mean, they have a number numerology part of it as well. Now, personally, I don't have any affinity towards it whatsoever. You know, it's just, I just don't. You know, other than Yod, Hey, Vav, Hey, and my engagement with the name of God, You know, I know Ian said the other day that he said that the nations or the language is encoded within our DNA. Well, mine certainly isn't Hebrew. It's English. Because God speaks to me in English. You know, so for me, it's like I have a relationship with the living Word of God. That means he talks to me and I talk to him. So I don't relate necessarily to those things myself. When an encounter happens, it will be, okay, what are you trying to show us here? Now, it may be just the fact that it's living, you know, and actually has got nothing to do with the fact that it's Hebrew letters, just the fact that, hey, these things are alive, that what the scroll is a living thing, it's active, and it's like a comic strip. So in a sense, when you put the Hebrew letters together into a word, you're forming a comic strip. Now, I personally have a problem if you need to understand Hebrew to be able to understand your destiny. Because I don't understand Hebrew, and I have no intention of learning unless God gives me a total download on it. But I still understand my destiny because I engage with God. So I have a problem in that if we have to learn this stuff to get a full understanding of revelation, then there's going to be billions of people on the planet who that excludes from getting that revelation. Now, those people who are drawn to this and bring insight from it, great. I, you know, it's like the whole thing. I mean, I'm looking again at mountains at the moment, and you know, the whole thing of the Hebrew meaning of mountain from the pictorial language is behold the ruler of rulers. Now, I have an understanding of revelation of mountains in authority and rulership. For years, I didn't need to understand the Hebrew function of it because I engaged in meditation on mountains and God gave me the revelation direct. Now, is it quite interesting that when someone says, well, this is what the Hebrew meaning of mountains is, it means ruling? Yeah, it's a confirmation of something I already knew. But I didn't need to understand the picture language for God to give me the revelation. That came from the Holy Spirit, who imparted the revelation through the Word of God and through my personal visions of it, so that I experienced it. So, it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's like someone spoke to me earlier, yesterday, about, you know, having the names of their angels, and then Ian saying, well, find their Hebrew name because you'll be able to engage with them better if you've got their Hebrew names. I mean, well, okay. But so, well, what names did they tell you they had when they introduced themselves to you? Were they Hebrew names? No. Well, why would you want to be using a name that they didn't give you? Surely they gave you the name that they wanted to be referred as, otherwise they would have given you another name. So it seemed to introduce a complicated thing into the process. So I have to go and find out the Hebrew name of something, so I'm going to get full understanding. Well, I would say if an angel wanted to reveal his Hebrew name, he would have told me it in the first place. I don't need to go and research it to find out something deeper, because I can have a relationship with him, and I'll go and ask him or her. So I just don't know. It just seemed to all complicate it for me. Whereas I can go and ask God and he'll tell me. And if there is a picture like that, then certain things, then okay, God, what are you showing us? What's the nature of this? Is it the symbol of the Hebrew letters, or is it the symbol of something that's living that really counts? So our scroll is a living, breathing thing. It's alive because we're alive and it's being written in a living way. So, you know, I don't have a full again answer to it, because it's not something that I personally resonate with. Those that do, wonderful, great. I just don't. You know, and some of it I've listened to people going into it and I'm just like, man, this is complicated. It doesn't need to be this complicated, surely. You know, so that's just my view of it, you know. And, you know, I'm only going to go where my spirit leads. And my spirit just doesn't lead me in that direction right now. Maybe one day it will. Certainly it doesn't right now. I just want to hear God and hang out with him and talk to him. you know, and therefore I don't really need a lot of other stuff to help me. It may help some people, which is great. It doesn't help me. It brings confusion sometimes. You know, I mean, I listened to one guy going into some of this stuff. Someone said, "Oh, listen to this. It's great." I got 20 minutes into it, and my head was fried. It was just like, I was like, "What are you on?" Because it just did not bring any life or revelation to me at all. Now, to someone else, it did. Fantastic. So I'm just, to me, it's like I'm not gonna. So I don't like coffee. I'm not gonna keep drinking coffee until I like it. I don't like it, and it's so. That's just how it is. You know, I drink water because I like water. Well, water feeds me. Coffee doesn't do anything for me. For other people love coffee, and drinking coffee be awesome for them. And I guess that's because we're all unique and individual, and therefore we just need to find how we're wired to connect with God and not try and copy what someone else is doing just because they might be Ian or they might be Mike or they might be somebody else. Find how I am supposed to relate to God and the things that he speaks to me about and shows me, because that's the real life to me. If I try and follow else's pattern, then actually I can miss out on the pattern and the life that God wants me to have. So I think there's a myriad of multifaceted and manifold ways that wisdom gets manifested to us that we need to tune into, you know, and not just assume that it's like everyone else. Because God may have a particular way of speaking to you guys, which will be totally different from everyone else. And you are asking me, well, what's the symbolism of that? And I'm going to probably say, got no idea, because I don't relate to it. Now, I could go and ask, but if I go and ask, then I'm just being another mediator rather than you asking. So it's better if you don't understand a visionary thing to go and seek the revelation, maybe together as a bench, and say, actually, we're going to come before God, and then we're going to step in and get the perspective of what this is meaning for us firsthand from God. You know, so although I am gifted in certain things, I am not exercising those gifts much towards people because I don't want to be a mediator. You know, so I'm going to tell people, hey, if God showed you the picture, he can show you the interpretation. Maybe he's just asking you to go and search out these mysteries, because that's what the mysteries are there for. So we'll go and search after them and pursue them, rather than, oh, well, I'm going to go to someone so they'll tell me. Then I'll miss out on the relational aspect of pursuing God and finding it myself. You know, which is why the priest went into the tabernacle, not the people, because the people said, we don't want to marry you, this is going to be too scary, so we'll send Moses. And then Moses set up the priesthood and the Levites to do it, because they didn't want to go themselves. You know, and then God said, okay, you don't want to come, fine. You can't touch this mountain anymore. You know, so, you know, that's really, so again, you know, probably not that helpful, but in one sense, hopefully you can get it from God. He'll give you the revelation of it. Anyway, so.
No, that was good. That brought some clarity. I appreciate that. Thanks, Mike.
Okay. I mean, I don't want to be controversial, and I'm not criticizing what other people do. That's great if they feel that, but just make sure that it's not imposed on everybody. I think that's the key.
Yeah.
Because this has to be a personally walked out relationship with the living God, not a copy of someone else's patterns and things, which is why I don't really try and get very specific in some of the things I see and things, just because I don't want people to try and imagine that rather than just using the doorway to go and find out their own encounter and pathway. There we go.
Good, thanks, Mike.
Okay. Probably got time for one more. If you got one more. Feel free. No?
No, I think we're still just trying to take in all that you've already told us. That That was pretty good. That was some. we're just trying to eat that right now, you know.
Fine, that's fine. Okay, that's good.
Well, I got one. I've always got my list.
Okay. Okay. Well then.
Okay, this concept that we've just come through. You know, we've come through the Yom Kippur and all of that, and you know that whole concept of the new year. And
that's three questions you've asked. I'm going to give you the same answer on all of it. But
no, the part about, and yeah. I think you've talked about this, the part about the promotion that at you know, we go under the shepherd's rod or whatever, that you know, God, there is this season where God is weighing things in the balance, and then based on that time period, there's a promotion, or there's a, you know, well, you get to go around the mountain again. Can you talk a little bit about that one?
Well, I personally think God's prophetic timetable is one of progression, but is also one of overlap. You know, and in my diagram of it, it's like, you know, God is still calling people into intimacy. You know, even 25 years later than the first call, whatever it is, probably more than that now. So, but he's still calling, and he's still wooing, and he's still drawing, and then the okay, now you know I love you. Now you're able to receive some correction and direction, and now I'm going to show you that there are some stumbling blocks that need to be removed because judgment is coming. Judgment is not a bad thing. Just it's going to identify, hey, this is more me, this is not me. So you've got a choice. Those seasons, you know, are seasons that God gives, so that we can get ready. But they're not, for me, they're not an end. They're always a beginning of something new. So in a sense, it's like just because I've received the revelation of being a stumbling block or having stumbling blocks and I've dealt with it and I'm now ready for judgment, that makes me up for judgment first because I've embraced the season. Those who haven't yet still get the opportunity. God has not said, this ends. He's just saying, I'm going to continually give people an opportunity until they say yes. If they choose to say no, that's their choice. But I'm not going to say stop calling, wooing people. So when it comes to this sort of Jewish New Year stuff and everything like that, again, I just have no connection to it whatsoever. It's like, for me, New Year starts on January the 1st. It's like, that is my New Year. That's what I live in. It's like, God speaks to me when I start seeking Him in December, and I get a whole load of revelation. So, you know, people in whenever it was, October, sort of saying, oh, Happy New Year, I'm like, whatever. It's like there's no connection with it. No, I'm not saying that people can't or people can see some stuff. For me, it's like it's an old covenant system that ended. The destruction of Jerusalem ended the old covenant system for good, which was an outworking of what Jesus did on the cross when he ended the old covenant system, when he set up a new living way. Why would I now want to come under moons and seasons of the old? I'm not saying that God can't sometimes use an illustration from it. Okay, the Day of Atonement. Well, let's face it, it's already happened, isn't it? We live in continual atonement. There is no day. It's like people celebrate Easter. It's like, I don't celebrate Easter. I celebrate Easter every day. Because I get to embrace the cross and resurrection power every day of my life from what Jesus has already done on the cross. I don't celebrate Christmas either. It's like Jesus is not a baby. He's a mature Son of God who's gone to the cross and now is in heaven. So I remember him as he is, not as he was. You know, I don't mind singing carols and stuff. Some of them have got some good words in them. They're quite sentimental and stuff, you know, and all that. But I don't see any significance in those things. I live in the new day, which is every day. You know, no, I'm not knocking people who celebrate Christmas and Easter. That's totally up to them. And sometimes you can use those things as connections to get people into meetings who wouldn't come any other time. There's a strategic sense where you can be all things to all men to sort of reach some people. You know, I've no problem with that. Just, I don't see the significance in these things. Now, I'm not saying that prophetically the different feasts doesn't have an effect, but we're now living in the fullness of the blessing of those, not in the, oh, we still have to engage them. So I don't need to embrace the Feast of Pentecost. I've been baptized in the Spirit, and I embrace the Spirit and invite the Spirit into my life every day. I don't need to embrace the Feast of Booths or the other things or the wave offering or those things. I'm living in the fullness of that was the shadow. So why would I want to go back to the shadow? That's just how I am. So again, you know, this, there are seasons without a doubt. Are they tied into the Hebrew seasons? Not for me personally. If people get something out of it, great. That's good, no problem. Get something out of it. But don't think that you are living in, oh, this is the Day of Atonement, and that's the only day that you can actually be in the full benefit of atonement. And that's just Old Covenant. It's just like a religious system. It's like we're free into a living relationship. The veil is torn. If the veil is torn, there is no system. We are actually living in the days of the Tabernacle of David, where it was just open and we all come in. Not one year. So, yeah, again, it's like I'm probably going to get some flack from some of this. It's just how I see it and how it works for me. And I'm not going to say it doesn't do something else if it doesn't, and it just doesn't. So, you know, those that wished me happy Hanukkah or whatever the things are, it's like, I've no idea what you're on about, because I'm not looking into that stuff. I'm looking into the truth that we have access into the very Holy of Holies all the time to engage God there. And the blood is already on the mercy seat perpetually. You know, so I live in the benefit and the fruit of what's happened on the cross, not in some Old Testament shadow of it. But there we go.
I got you in trouble again, Mike. Sorry.
You probably have. But hey, I'm just going to say it as it is. You know, I'm not knocking other people. If people ask me to comment, I'm just like, well, I just don't get it. You know, there's nothing that resonates with me when it comes to that. Because I just see it as old. You know, and why would I want to go back to the old? Well, I'm looking forward to the new. The only old thing I want to go back to is my eternal destiny, which I want to bring in today. You know, and live out of the perpetual understanding of that. You know, so there we go. All right. I'm going to start.